We've got to wrap it up. I tell you, I want to continue this discussion with you another day. I'm more than happy to have you call in, but we're running up against the evil hour, and there's nothing I can do to stop the second hand. So thanks for calling in, Bob. I appreciate it. Let's continue this discussion another day. Tomorrow, I'm doing my famous show on the Second Amendment and guns. Listen in for that. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. Rescue efforts resume in rural southwest Washington state today, where flooding has forced hundreds from their homes that are currently underwater. More than 100,000 are without power. In Oregon, National Guard troops evacuated the town of Vernonia in rafts. The storm that hit the northwest Monday left 5 people dead in Oregon and Washington. The good news, it has stopped raining for now. Progress is slow at the climate meeting in Bali. The 190-nation gathering about global warming took small steps today toward curbing greenhouse gas emissions, especially in China and India. President Bush claims he'll veto a new congressional law toughening fuel standards for cars. It's the first change in fuel standards in 30 years. The legislation is designed to decrease greenhouse gas emissions and increase fuel efficiency. The president held a news conference today and said Iran is still a danger, despite a new U.S. intelligence report that says Tehran's nuclear weaponry program was halted 4 years ago and remains on hold. Iran's foreign minister responded to that report yesterday and said they welcome the correction by U.S. intelligence, although the report cautioned that while the nuclear weapons development program is not in operation, Iran is still enriching uranium. U.S. nuclear negotiator Christopher Hill is meeting with his North Korean counterpart today. Yesterday, Hill became the highest-ranking American to visit Pyongyang's reactor. 5 National Guard brigades, about 15,000 soldiers, have been called up for combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, scheduled to start in the summer of 2009. North of Baghdad, the U.S. military says soldiers accidentally killed one civilian and wounded 3 others yesterday. American troops opened fire on a vehicle slow to stop at a roadblock. The British schoolteacher imprisoned in Sudan for violating Islamic law has arrived back home in London. She was pardoned by Sudan's president after serving half of her 2-week sentence. Former Democratic fundraiser Norman Hsu was formally charged in a 15-count indictment for engaging in a fraud scheme involving illegal campaign contributions in other people's names. Hsu contributed an estimated $850,000 to Hillary Clinton's campaign. This is QNN.
It won't be long before every business and most individuals will have their own website. Whether they are looking for new clients or posting information of use to their colleagues, the website makes printing brochures and price sheets, press releases, and community notices virtually obsolete. With your own website, you can provide the latest information as it becomes available on new products and services, special offers, and company news. You no longer have to stare at errors or out-of-date information that was printed up in bulk. For organizations, you can bring your message to the public, just as you are knitting tighter relations with your supporters and staff. The people who can make all of that possible are at Byte Technology. Find out more. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com. Or call 831-656-9178. Byte Technology, 656-9178.
A congressional committee criticized credit card executives for using falling credit scores to charge customers higher interest rates. Members of the committee say it's an example of abusive and confusing credit practices that often push consumers into deeper debt. Treasury officials and mortgage companies continue discussing a plan to temporarily freeze lower introductory rates to curb foreclosures. About 2 million subprime U.S. mortgages will reset to higher levels next year. Tax Preparer H&R Block closed down its subprime home lending unit, laying off 620 people. The move comes after an agreement to sell the unit to another company failed. Microsoft will tone down its campaign against pirated software instead of shutting down most of a customer's computer when it finds questionable materials. The updated system will nag the user. Frequent pop-up warnings will appear telling the user their operating system is fake. And light sweet crude oil is trading down 99 cents at $88.32 a barrel. Gold is up $13 at $807 an ounce. The Dow Jones closed down today 66 points, the NASDAQ was down 17 points, and the S&P 500 was down 10 points. We have more news on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
Okay! Tokyo! South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Wow, the fruit are hanging low on the tree, and they are ripe for the whacking tonight. I was afraid that, you know, with Christmas season approaching, things might get a little bit sort of, you know, slow, dull maybe. No, not quite. It's the Christmas season, and therefore the right-wing religion industry, among other things, is going to try to make this as, you know, un-holiday-ish a season as they humanly possibly can. And that seems an appropriate place to start. But, of course, don't let me forget that it turns out that, you know, because we live in upside-down world, opposite world, or just Republican world, words don't mean what words say they mean. Because, well, you'll find out. You probably already know. We still apparently need to bomb the snot out of Iran if it's left up to certain people in the Bush administration, which just astonishes me. But let's start with, let's start with some right-wing weirdness. You know, nobody hates constitutional civil liberties quite like a Republican. And when it comes to right-wing hate, no one does it quite like folks in the great state of Texas. The University of Texas has a student organization called the Young Conservatives of Texas. And they've got a chairman there, and her name is Liz Young. Somehow or another, Miss Young managed to actually get into an institution of higher learning, and apparently so far none of the good progressive values that are so frequently taught at the University of Texas have rubbed off, because the Young Conservatives of Texas have decided to do a mockery of the Nativity. That's right. Upstanding, godly, Christian, Young Conservatives of Texas have decided to mock the miraculous birth of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. What do I mean? Well, let's let her describe it for herself. They've set up a nativity scene at the University of Texas in Austin, and they've changed, shall we say, they have recast the usual characters in that nativity scene. Here she goes.
Scene, which we are crossing out the nativity scene and calling it a solstice barn. We have Gary and Joseph instead of Mary and Joseph to symbolize the ACLU's support of homosexual marriage. And then there's no Jesus in the manger because we don't want to have anything that involves religion or Christianity in the scene at all. There's no baby because of their support for abortion. There's a terrorist angel, Nancy Pelosi, is keeping watch over the whole thing because she seems to support everything the ACLU does and is in charge of what goes on in the House right now. And then for the three wise men, we have Lenin, Marx, and Stalin, because the founders of the ACLU were supporters of Soviet-style communism. And then Marx is holding a child porn disc because one of the ACLU founders and supporters was caught with child pornography on his computer. The purpose, we really just want to raise awareness and let people know that even though the ACLU claims to be standing up for the Constitution, what they're really doing is just going against the cultural values of mainstream America and attacking Christianity while they're doing it. So we just want people to know about it. And this is kind of a funny way of getting the point across.
Yeah, that's real funny there, Liz, making fun of the miraculous birth of your Lord and Savior. Ha, ha, ha. That's a real knee slapper there, Miss Liz. Jesus, that's sickening. No, that's funny. I talk about that and then I say Jesus. Well, guess what? You know, I don't buy into the hootenanny that they buy into. But yeah, that's the Jung conservatives of TX is idea of a darn fine time mocking the nativity. We don't have Joseph and Mary. We have Gary and Joseph and Mary. We have Joseph and Gary because of the ACLU support for homosexual marriage. Right. No baby in the manger because the ACLU is running around ripping fetuses from the wombs of pregnant mothers. The angel is Nancy Pelosi. The shepherd is a terrorist with dynamite strapped to it. Oh, I don't care who you are. That's funny. Now, you know, I mean, because I do believe in the mission of the ACLU, I don't want to see this freakish little thing that the best part of whom ran down her mother's leg that be suppressed in her speech. But boy, it sure is ironic, isn't it? I wonder if anybody has alerted the American Family Association to this mockery of their God. And the three wise men are Lenin, Marx, and Stalin. Marx is holding a DVD case that says ACLU proudly presents child porn. You'll notice she says that one of the founders of the ACLU was found to have child porn on their computer. Does this stupid little ditz even know when the ACLU was founded? One of their founders. My God, the computer must have been the size of the Empire State Building, or at least two or three rooms. Because, you know, the ACLU was founded a good long while back. It's not exactly a new kid on the organizational block. I thank very much our blogger, Texas Betsy, for sending that along to me. I probably should have hung on to it for the prayer meeting, but you know what? No. Because on the one hand, you've got the young conservatives of Texas mocking the nativity. And on the other hand, you've got the American Family Association, who sent me an email today saying, Ford and three men in a shower. You know, they're boycotting Ford because Ford is selling their cars to GASP, people who don't have sex the way that Reverend Donald Wildman wants them to have sex. And they proudly point out that since the American Family Association began a boycott of Ford in March 2006, sales have dropped in 18 of the 21 months. Ford suffered a 12.1% loss for the year. brethren and sistren, it is a miracle. It truly is. It's an honest-to-goodness miracle. But they did rise 0.4% in November, so, you know, the miracle got a little modest in November. But they're terribly, terribly upset. They are the American Family Association. Because, lo and behold, Ford ran a full-page ad in the December 2007 to January 2008 Homer sectional publication called Out. Gee, I thought Out was a magazine for people who cast out demons. Yeah, no. The ad for Ford's Volvo brand was adjacent to a photo of three men taking a shower together. To see the ad and the shower photo, click here. Warning! The photo is extremely graphic and offensive. You're really going to like it. That's why we linked to it. You know me. I'm going to click that link. And I got to tell you, it was a picture of three guys who were, in fact, naked in a shower, none of whom was turned around, you know, showing anything. It was three butts, okay? It was three naked butts. And it wasn't even associated with the Ford ad, the way the dadgum hypocritical liars at the American Family Association lay it out. It's a ad for a Volvo, and there's three naked men in it, and they's having an orgy. And there's a shower, too. They's getting that good upholstery. I'll weigh it. The American Family Association asked Ford to remain neutral in the culture war, but Ford refused. How is reaching out to, you know, Ford advertises in soccer mom magazines, Women's Home Daily Journal thing, Cosmopolitan, Vogue. They advertise in Sports Illustrated and Maxim and softcore porn that isn't really in Playboy, and they advertise in newspapers. They advertise to the young male demographic, the older male demographic, the younger female demographic, the mommy demographic. They advertise to people that they hope will buy their daggum cars, and the American Family Association is hell-bent, and oh God, how true that is, hell-bent on seeing to it that Ford dies rather than try to sell cars who have sex differently from how one of those can't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody, Wildman, wants them to have it. What's wrong with this country? Why can't these religious fundamentalists just mind their own damn business? That's not hard to do. Mind your own business. Yeah, I got taught that, and so did you probably. Yeah, it was one of those tender little moments at mother's knee. Son, mind your own business. You know, when you're about four, you start getting mind your own business. Well, I know his parents let him stay up later, but, you know, I'm not his parents, and his parents aren't yours, and you got to go to bed right now, and it's none of your business how late he gets to stay up over at his house, so don't try to use that. Mind your own business, son. Bless your heart, Gunny Bob. Dang, now I got to buy a Ford. You know, could it be, I know the American Family Association wants to take credit for Ford's falling sales, but could it be the proliferation of gas-guzzling behemoths as opposed to trying to sell Volvos to gay dudes that's accounting for their lackluster sales? Could it be the fact that when Toyota and Honda were working feverishly on putting out hybrid vehicles that Ford put out one and said, well, that's enough. The AFA isn't boycotting Chrysler or Dodge or Chevy. But I'm sure that gay people buy their cars, too. I mean, I don't know. We can wait for Strictly Confidential tonight and see if Peter got the memo or anything, you know, from the gay high command that, you know, thou shalt buy only Fords and Volvos. But I'm guessing there's some Chevy-driving gay people and some Nissan-driving gay people and some Toyota-driving gay people and some Audi-driving gay people, Mercedes and BMW and Volvo and Ford and Chrysler and Volkswagen, maybe? Kia? Subaru? Hyundai? Honda? The stupidity is simply amazing. And these are the people who are thrilled to death to see that Mike Huckabee is in the Republican lead out in Iowa. Because they really don't trust Mitt Romney and his magic underwear or his, you know, secret Indian Jews or the fact that the Mormon Church only declared African Americans to be real, live, honest to God, full human beings in 1978. Oh, okay. Mark Levine owns a Nissan Maxima. Okay. Maxima's a nice car. Bye, Mark. So, that's where we begin. And Lord knows that's not where we stop. You know, the right wing is so busted up about how people have sex, and, you know, they've gotten millions and millions of taxpayer dollars thrown into these abstinence-only programs. Well, guess what? There's a new story out. Dookie, Wally, Clyde over at WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, 40, WD40.com. Sex study has a surprising result. It says teens who wait more likely to misbehave than those who don't. From the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Dateline Charlottesville, Virginia. The author Carlos Santos writes, the study was controversial as well as counterintuitive. It said sex at an early age by teenagers might have some repercussions. Good ones. Catherine Page Harden, a doctoral candidate in clinical psychology at the University of Virginia, was the lead investigator in the study that she said surprised even her. The study, now see, this is interesting because she didn't do it, you know, fundamentalist-ishly. She didn't start out with a conclusion and then work backwards to prove it. She started out, you know, according to the scientific method, with a hypothesis and then gathered data to see if her hypothesis was supported. And she got surprised. The study analyzed 534 same-sex twins in the United States and found that teens who had early sex were less likely to engage in delinquent behavior in early adulthood than teenagers who waited to have sex. The current online edition of the Journal of Youth and Adolescence has the findings. They're published there. UVA graduate students Jane Mendel and Jennifer E. Hill, as well as UVA psychology professor Eric Turkheimer, analyzed data from twins to better determine whether behaviors are the result of genes or the socioeconomic environment, and they found out that teens who had sex earlier had better relationships later in life. Harden said she undertook the study because she believed that conventional thinking that early sex by teenagers meant bad behavior later on was incorrect. Quote, I had a hunch that the study would show that the correlation between early sex and delinquency would go away. She said her hunch was based on her own observations while doing clinical work at UVA. While adults talk about teenage sex as a bad thing, teenagers don't talk that way, she said. No, they don't. They talk about it as, you know, sex. They don't muddy it up with a bunch of moralizing. You know, they're just sort of, you know, getting on. So, you know, guess what? Once again, it's proven that abstinence-only education not only doesn't work, it's downright bad for you. It leads to criminal conduct. Woohoo! Who saw that one coming? Never mind. This will not be mentioned in the weekly newsletter from the American Family Association. Largely because they're all entirely too busy at looking at them really neat pictures of them men's backsides. How glory! Because, you know, the AFA has to give you a link to the naked picture. Warning! Graphic! No, it wasn't. Not unless you're somebody who's so hopelessly closeted that the sight of three pairs of naked male buttocks sends you into paroxysms of sexual frenzy. This is, well, look, I mean, it just is what it is. This is where the show is going tonight. Not entirely, but in part at least. And, of course, you are welcome to chime in with anything that is just, you know, lighting you up. Because it is, after all, conversation radio. So, you know, don't be shy. By all means, jump right in. But there's a lot of other stuff too. I mean, there's George Bush's little the White House press conference today, and that was just an exercise in rampant insanity. You know, sometimes I don't know. I get the sensation that it's probably a matter of. All these conservatives are just jealous because they think everybody else out there is getting more than they are. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. Listener-supported, independent, conversation radio. We'll be right back.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
All right, we're back, and of course, my automation software has just crashed on me, so there's no rejoin music, but, you know, what the hell. Welcome to Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's see, for this 25 minutes and change or so, how about a little sort of pair of divergent stories, if you will. Again, my sincerest thanks to the tremendous work that goes on over at WD40.com. I don't know how Clyde and Wally and Dookie find all this stuff, but jeepers, they sure do. And sometimes, you know, I say, oh, well, great, I'm glad you found it. And sometimes I read it and I just put my head in my little hands and I go, guys... Oh. Arab American paratrooper faces deportation when he returns from Afghan service. You ever wonder about the people that write headlines, whether it's for an old-fashioned print newspaper or the headlines on the internet, and they just sit there and they calmly type, Arab American paratrooper faces deportation when he returns from Afghan service. Next. I remember way, way, way back when, you know, I rode to work on a dinosaur, when I would go in and do journalism, and I got away from it in large part because it seemed like it was a steady drumbeat of miserable crap that I couldn't do anything to help. And you just sit there and you read it and you tell America about it and you hope that they're, you know, your only hope doing top-of-the-hour radio news is that somebody, A, actually hears it, B, if you're lucky, comprehends it, and C, The most you can really hope for out of that is for him to go, well, damn. A highly decorated Arab-American sergeant in the U.S. Army who is currently serving as a paratrooper in Afghanistan faces deportation on his return to the United States because of an irregularity in his immigration papers. Oh, this is just a charming story, I tell you. Sergeant Hisham Binkabu has been served with an order to stand trial for deportation as soon as he gets home from risking his life, despite the fact that he has been on active duty in Afghanistan for almost 2 years with the 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment, known as the Red Devils. His lawyers, in a brilliant stroke of understatement, say his treatment illustrates the harsh justice meted out to Arab Americans by the U.S. immigration authorities. Duh. I mean, I hate to seem shallow or anything, but really? Duh. They didn't have any problem letting him into the American military because the Pentagon was desperately in need of, you know, warm bodies, because they were desperately in need of, you know, going to Afghanistan and Iraq and, well, we'll leave that part alone for a moment. But they found that his papers are not in order. This is a very disturbing case. This man has been serving our nation, putting his life on the line on behalf of America. This is a setback to attempts to encourage recruitment to the military, said the ADC's Imad Hamad. His lawyer in Atlanta, Georgia, Paul Ford, said the only explanation he could find was that his client was a Muslim, quote, which sets off all the buzzers. There's no question. Don't say buzzers when you're talking about it. No, because there's a Guantanamo story coming up. Was that his client was a Muslim, which sets off all the buzzers. There's no question that Arab Americans are given a totally different treatment. Mr. Ford said that Binkabu had been accused of being a terrorist by officials from the Immigration Enforcement Agency, you know, the Icemen. We've talked about them before. You know, the Icemen, whose leader, Julie Myers, threw a Halloween party where she gave first place to a guy who showed up in blackface, prison garb, and dreadlocks. He showed real creativity. He really, really did. All right. Let's see who we've got on the phone. Forgot to turn the dadgum ringer off. I so need a producer. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Pat in Boston.
Hey, how you doing, Pat?
Good, how are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Malloy covered that story about the sergeant last night.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
Kind of, I don't know, typical, I guess, for what we're going through in this country these past 7 years.
Well, I guess the only way he can avoid deportation is if he comes home in a box, right?
Yep.
Or maybe they'll deport the box. You know how paranoid this Bush administration is. I mean, they're pretty sad, sick creatures.
Well, I called because my family's been down visiting the in-laws, and so I've had time to watch a few movies that my wife would rather not, you know, sit through with me.
Right, because they induce the screaming.
Yeah. And so I got to watch No End in Sight last night, and let me tell you, it's definitely worth watching, but if you have any little kids in the house, or you better clear them out, because I couldn't get through it without, you know, cursing every 2 minutes.
what was there anything in particular that really set you off, or was it just the overall everything?
Well, it was all just people who were involved in the run-up to the war and what happened after the war, and they just go through and they explain what they were trying to do and what the Bush administration decided to do, and, you know, this is how we got to where we are. You know, but there were plans there that could have made this a lot easier. Granted, we shouldn't have been there to begin with, but there were plans there that could have made this a lot easier for everyone and a lot less death for everyone. And, you know, they decided, whether it was Rumsfeld or Cheney or Bush or whoever, decided that they're not going to follow these plans. They're going to do it their way. And, you know, everybody else can, you know, go pound sand, you know.
And that goes all the way back to, like, who was it, Eric Shinseki? Who said, you know, it's going to take more troops, and they said, you're fired.
Yeah, but, I mean, and the thing is, these weren't, like, the people that they talked to weren't, you know, your cast of liberals, you know. These were people that were in the government, in the military, you know, that didn't have a problem with the war itself, you know. They just had a problem with how it was handled afterwards. And I think it was just very educational. And I think everyone should see it. I also saw Redacted, the Brian De Palma movie.
What did you think of that? I've had a few people write to me about it, and it's fairly moving, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty moving. I was a little bit confused right off the bat, because the way that they set the movie up, it looks very amateurish, and I don't think that it takes away from it necessarily, but like, if you look on Internet Movie Database at the people's comments that they put there, all these people that give it really low ratings start off by saying, I'm against the war in Iraq, but this movie looks like crap, and, you know, this is why I'm giving it a one star. It's not the message. And it's like, you know, clearly it's the message for you. It's, you know, I don't know. I didn't think that the look of the movie detracted from it. I thought the story, I knew about the story. I don't know.
The appearance was deliberate, wasn't it?
I would presume so, yeah. I mean, it seemed like that to me. But yeah, it was difficult to watch.
And knowing that it was based, you know, not that, I mean, it certainly wasn't a documentary, but knowing that it was based on fact didn't make anything any easier.
Right. And then I saw Lions for Lambs, and I went to the theater and saw that. And that was fantastic. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that's the Robert Redford vehicle. Right.
That was really, it was very hopeful in some senses, and others it, you know, it makes you cry. I mean, it was very, very good movie. That's my little step in for David from Maine, I guess, culture. Sorry, David, I don't want to.
No, you're not stepping on anybody's toes. No.
And cartoon-wise, if you can get over to Cartoon Network and check out Lucy, Daughter of the Devil, I highly recommend that. It's very funny. It's only 10-minute episodes, and I believe they have most of them on the web. So.
Oh, cool.
It's the same people. Did you ever watch Home Movies?
Yeah.
Cartoon Network?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same people, and I'm a big fan of theirs. So.
Cool.
I think actually Sam Cedar's involved with it. So.
Well, I did not know that part. I did not know.
Yeah.
The Sam Cedar angle.
Yeah, you can pick out his voice every once in a while.
I think that would be so much fun to do. Yeah. I was. I mean, I've done some voiceover work from time to time, And, yeah, that's just a blast.
So, yeah, that's all I got tonight.
All right, well, when do the wife and kids come back?
I think I'm going to be taking a ride down there tomorrow to bring them home. I think that's the plan anyway.
Well, by all means, you know, stay safe. Has the evil weather hit up there yet?
We got about a half an inch on Sunday night and another maybe half an inch yesterday. But, it's freezing. It makes going outside, and I try to make time to enjoy a cigar every day, and it makes it very difficult to go sit on the porch and have a cigar. The wind howling. We've got the cold and the wind, not much snow.
It is kind of hard to stand out in that and smoke a 2-hour Corona. Sure.
Yep.
I've actually done that kind of thing, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's the thing that my wife uses to show that I'm addicted to them.
The fact that you'll stand in the cold?
Yeah.
No, that's not proof that you're addicted to them. That's proof that you can't smoke them in the house.
That's right.
Of course, you know how my poor, sad, little twisted mind works, but I can justify anything in the name of my addiction. I don't think... I know for a fact from the times that I was a non-cigarette cigar smoker, I didn't walk around going, "Oh, I need a cigar." No, it never happened that way. On the other hand, when I finally broke down and lit the first cigarette, it was like I'd never quit. I was all junked up and jonesed up, almost instantaneously.
Yeah, I've been 10 years off cigarettes. So.
Then I don't think anybody should carp at you over a cigar. You get a trophy, not a gripe. Well, listen, you take it easy and give our regards to your wonderful family. Pat the little guys on the head for us. You're doing the work of the angels, raising those twins.
You tell Agnes and your family the same from us.
I sure will, Pat. You take care now.
You too, Bob. Bye.
Bye. So, on the one hand, you have an Arab-American paratrooper who has risked his life countless times, and the minute he gets home, the Icemen are going to seize him and detain him. And, well, the other side of this coin is the recently released Standard Operating Procedures Manual for Camp Delta at Guantanamo Bay. Seen this? We'll get into that, but you know how I am about making people wait. Let's see if this is actually a person or the rollover system going wild. No, that's a person. Hey,
yeah,
welcome.
Yeah, this is me.
Hey, Juanita, how are you, dear?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm getting along.
I wanted to say something about that church nativity scene.
Well, it wasn't church.
It wasn't church.
The young conservatives of Texas who are mocking Christ.
I guarantee you that if it had been the Democrats, my God.
Oh, you'd hear about it. You would hear about it, Juanita. You would hear about it in every blessed pulpit in right-wing religion industry America.
Oh yeah, and I think it's very sacrilegious myself.
Well, it's blasphemous.
If they're claiming to be Christians, I mean, they're mocking what he's all about anyway. He loves the gays. He loves people who are for or against abortion. You know, whatever. He loves people. He made us. If you believe in him, and I do, I believe he made us and. However he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just so crazy. What is their point?
Their point is being nasty, Juanita.
Yeah.
Their point is being in our faces and what? In ensuring that America know that they've got to continue to demonize liberals and progressives, Juanita, yeah. because we
they
are.
They don't know when to stop, do they?
Because if we start fixing their mess, they're going to be out of business.
Yeah.
And that's just all there
stop.
Is to it.
They really don't know when to stop.
They know when to stop. That's not the problem. The problem is their inability to recognize their own evil. They're all for, to get all biblical, they're all for pulling the mote out of our eyes, but they're utterly oblivious to the beam that is in their own.
Well, I just think, and like I say, working around different people and being around, you know, it's like whatever they do is all right. It's just like Bush, you know, he can have all the people slaughtered, and he can lie every day. I mean, he's on TV today lying his head off.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's okay. But I remember one thing they passed around about Gore when he was running for the presidency in the 2000. They said, oh, he claimed his mother sang Look for the Union Label when he was a baby. Like that was something terrible.
Oh, and then it was, that jingle didn't come out until 1969. It was July.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have possibly sung it. He's a liar. He's a pathological liar. He's a serial fabricator. Oh, I remember it all so well.
Yeah, I got a list from a friend of mine. She sent me a list that she'd gotten from church, and she said, we don't need this guy. And it was some of the most nonsensical stuff you ever want to read. I got partial list somewhere, but I was trying to find the whole thing. But anyway, it's whatever they do, that's okay. They can torture, that's okay. But don't do nothing to them. Don't say anything about them. Was it a paratrooper?
Yes.
Isn't our country twisted and crazy?
No,
no wonder.
The people running the military are, and that again is the same crowd that, that you've just been describing as, you know, sick.
Hello?
Yeah.
I thought we went dead.
No.
And you know, kind of like the some of those churches that had the hell things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about those?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, please, honestly, I mean, why should anybody want to be a Christian if they're not already? I mean, why would that attract anybody? That's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to let their light shine. I'm just sorry, but it's just so twisted.
Well,
and so sad.
We're talking about wickedness, Juanita, wickedness. And I mean, from the top down. And the people that go along with it are the ones that really drive me bananas, because the people at the top know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
And they're leading,
and they're
assuming the ignorance and treating like sheep the people at the bottom.
Agreed. I agree. And
and the sheep are apparently happy to be sheep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to have my little say about that. And did you get my email about carcinogens?
Yes.
Isn't that funny? I thought that was so cute. She's something else. She's a good little political wife.
Well, she is. And the Red State Report, there's a bunch of those on YouTube. And I saw one earlier today that just had me howling.
What was it about? I'll look at
it. It was... I can't think of it offhand, but
it about one of the candidates?
Yes, yeah, they all are. I think it was about Mike Huckabee, I think, and it was an absolute riot. Mike Huckabee.
I
call him Mike
Huckabee.
Yeah,
they got a lot on him about him. I've heard on some news that he's going up in the polls, but that doesn't surprise me. But I'll tell you, there's a real funny one on there about Mike Malloy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's one. If you look up Mike Malloy, there's one where this guy calls in and asks him something, and he says, well, because I'm a communist.
I was actually listening.
It is so funny. And then you got another one where I think that was an older man, older guy, you know, not old, but anyway, and then there's another one where this young guy was telling him all this stuff, and he said, so there, you know, and it was so, both of them are so funny. I mean.
Yeah, well, sometimes I envy Mike his wingnut collars, but most of the time I don't, because they make you feel like your head's going to split open like a, you know, an overripe melon.
Well, I think it happens to him, too. And he's amazing, but you know, he's one of the kindest people who don't talk nonsense to him. He's a very kind person.
Sure.
I've never talked to him on the phone, but.
Oh, you should sometime. He's an absolute gem.
I've never had occasion to call in, you know, and I don't get him that much anymore, but, you know, these are people that, you know, he just can't stand it sometimes. And I imagine you can't either.
Oh, there are nights that I just curl up in a fetal ball over in the corner and suck my thumb after the show's over.
Yeah. Okay, well, you have a nice evening.
All right. Well, thank you, Juanita. You too. Good to hear from you.
And you take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll just see what we can do here. All right. Yep.
Hello, Bob. This is Sarge.
Oh, hey, Sarge. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Before I get started, I want to drop some good news off on, a couple of pieces of good news.
All right, wonderful.
I got a call this morning from Victor Lopez.
Oh, good.
He is now a free man.
No kidding.
100% free. He's coming out to Phoenix. He'll be out here sometime next week, and I'm going to meet with him, and he's going to give you a call. He wants to talk with you and thank you for your support and all the Horn listeners.
Well, I can't wait to hear from him, Sarge. That's the best news I've had all day.
Well, I tell you what, that is great news. And another piece of good news I got is because of KPHX out here, my dental work that had gotten to a point where it was really threatening my well-being, a company stepped up here and they're going to take care of all my dental problems.
Well, hot dog, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it shows what we can do if we all band together and work together. I had a man in New Orleans who suffered MAC, which is a form of tuberculosis, and he was stranded and couldn't get out to get the treatment he needed. Through Jim Yancey, was able to get him out there. He got his treatment. They found other complications. They treated it, and he's now home in Slidell, and his prognosis is good. So, you know, it shows what the power of working together can do. Yeah, these rats have taken over our nation, but we're taking it back, and this is a sign of how we're going to take it back. We can't look at it all at one time, but we can do our share.
You can't eat it all in one bite. You're absolutely right.
And you know, it's like getting to a national championship game. You just got to get through Pittsburgh first, right?
Stop it.
But we're looking.
Oh, that's just that is cold. That is cruel, Sarge. Yeah, I am still healing, man.
Well, I'm still mad about USM having to go to Birmingham.
Well, you know, I don't know how you feel about it, but the way they treated Jeff Bauer was University of Southern Mississippi. The way they treated Jeff Bauer shouldn't have happened to a dog.
Well, you know, I hadn't heard about that. I'm out here.
They ditched him. They ditched him.
Oh, well, I tell you, it's a llama Southern Miss. I'm very, very upset by that because Bauer is a fine man. He's done a lot for the program, and it's just not right. But anyway, I just wanted to call and give you that news and thank you on Pitcher's behalf, and he'll thank you later himself for all the support you've given him. He has a bright future in front of him, thanks to all the liberals out here. So, everybody, you've done good work. Let's keep it up. We can do more.
All right. Thank you very much, Sarge. Glad to hear all the good news. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And, you know, I hate to keep people on hold through the news, so let's see if this is a caller. Hello?
Hello, Bob?
Yeah.
It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I got you fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the disdain in popular culture for immigrants now, with to the fact it's trickling down to the children. Today was my first day teaching.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and you know,
are you okay?
Yeah, it's really not that bad once I start getting the lesson plan. You know, once I have my class, I'm filling in for somebody else's class. So mm-hmm. just a case of they're not going to respect you.
Right.
They're not. Because even the kid goes, well, I was trying to say, well, here's an assignment that, you know, the person who I was filling in
mm-hmm.
left behind and you to do this. He goes, you owe me a sub. Which is kind of funny, but true.
Yes.
You know, because looking back when I was a teenager, I kind of felt that way. The sub is going to have the audacity to make us do work, you know?
Yeah, if you rethink that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you're here for a day. You're not going to change my life. Yeah.
Exactly. However, so basically I had to handle the approaches, okay, as long as they don't kill each other, and more importantly, kill me, and just keep them calm for like 30 minutes, I'll be doing my job effectively.
True.
And, you know, try and keep the voice level at a low level. So one of the kids, anyway, we have computers in the classroom. I don't know why, first of all, because all that is an excuse for them to go on YouTube and MySpace. But anyway, one of the kids, it was two different kids. One, I think, was Middle Eastern American or East Indian American, and another black kid. And, you know, they were clowning around. And, you know, one time they got up being disruptive, and I sat them down. And then, you know, the African American kid goes to the computer, and he goes, excuse me, sir, do you know the number for the Bureau of Immigration or INS? And I'm like, no, I don't. And he goes, oh, I wanna get their number so I can deport this terrorist.
In your classroom, this went on?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
And it's not the only incident. You know, it's like all over the school. It was like anybody who's of, you know, dubious racial, you know, persuasion, which is basically brown people, who's not either black or white,
yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm going to call him. And that's like the ongoing joke in the teenage world now. I'm going to call immigration on you. The other day when I was, you know, doing some work in front of my house here in Brooklyn, this girl yells out, you know, you dirty Mexican, to this other girl.
So, well, this is the nation that the Bushistas have desperately tried to create, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, it's like there's such a disdain for immigrants now. It's like, or people of dubious, you know, who is unclear racial. It's either you're, you know, African American or you're lily white, and anything in between. It's kind of like, maybe we should call INS. Because I was even approached.
So, you know, this first day, Kevin, it's not exactly like you walked in and they were playing the Welcome Back Cotter theme, in other words.
No, they're not. but I'm,
no notes from Epstein's mom.
Yeah. But it's just that it just amazed me how much Lou Dobbs and, you know, this right wing. Because in my day, there were probably just as many people of brown persuasion being from New York and all. But you didn't have this kind of, you know, hatred or just downright bigotry. You know, they'll call you a fool, a clown, or whatever, but to cut right through, to call you, you know, to threaten to call immigration, to have you deported kind of thing, it's something within the pop culture and the news or whatever that's giving this information to these kids.
And, well, as well as what goes on in the home.
Yeah.
They're, and, you know, they can't help but be bombarded with this immigration stuff and this hatred. because it's the Bush administration has done an A1 job of making sure that they're absolutely saturated with it, surrounded by it, haven't they? I mean, isn't that the world they live in?
Yeah. You know, it's like when you go on Fox News, it's every 5 minutes. Not. I try to avoid going on Fox News, mind you. But even, you know, the so-called legitimate news like NBC, which is, or CBS, that's what you hear. You know, Lou Dobbs has basically resurrected his career over this stuff.
Yeah, and did you catch that the other day, speaking of which? Did you catch that the other day, Kevin? It turns out that Lou Dobbs is routinely fed information by the Tom Tancredo's office?
No, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's true. And, yeah, just, Jesus. I mean,
You know, I kind of like his labor stance, but it's just when he gets into this immigration thing, I just have to turn the channel. Because the reality is, you know, not one of these people is really addressing the immigration issue in an effective manner, which is, if you leave these countries alone to develop an economy on their own, you'd be surprised how quickly immigration will end.
The issue, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how that issue will start to end. But as long as you have U.S. corporations who are going to go into these companies and the European corporations or foreign corporations, which basically goes in, wipe out local businesses, and, you know, just go in, wipe out, and basically carpet bag, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
This is what you're going to have.
Well, there's nothing there that I take issue with. You know, look at what we created, the so-called Mexican Central American immigration problem with NAFTA. We created it with our own right-to-work laws here in the United States. We begged for it to happen for all intents and purposes. And it's a little bit hypocritical for us to turn around and go, oh, you know, dang, we sure are shocked at this. Why? What's to be shocked at?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like I said, you know, in the Caribbean where I come from, in the British-speaking Caribbean, particularly Jamaica, you know, the fact that Jamaica's importing certain crops that the island is known for, like ginger, it's a disgrace. And this is part of that free trade thing where, okay, the local ginger farmer may be wiped out, but we're importing ginger from an American company that happens to be based in one of the Central American countries, because the labor is cheaper in Central America than it is in Jamaica.
Yeah. Well, I've got a story here, speaking of Jamaica, out of Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah.
Huntsville, Alabama has 2.7% unemployment. And there is a company there, one of our listeners, I think it was Larry, sent this along. It turns out that this company that does nothing more than duplicate DVD movies is going to pay $8 an hour, and they're recruiting, you know, not in the surrounding counties to Huntsville, Alabama. They're recruiting in Jamaica and the Dominican Republic.
Oh, yeah, for the labor.
For the labor to sit there and put DVDs in boxes.
Yeah. And the thing is, so this is what a lot of these companies do. They go around from island to island or from country to country looking for the cheapest labor they can find. And what ends up happening, especially in the former British colonies like Jamaica, Trinidad, and Guyana, is that a lot of these countries were founded by union, you know, the union movements are very strong, because that's how these countries became nations.
That's how they got middle classes?
Yeah.
To the extent that they have them? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and in spite of these countries still being poor, in you know, the West Indies still has a large middle class, unlike Central and South America.
Yeah.
And that's why you find a lot of West Indians very you know, sympathetic to England, too, because it could have been worse. As bad as the English were, it could have been worse.
Yeah.
Because, it, you know, you try to mention the word union in Dominican Republic, which is basically an American colony, or El Salvador, or Nicaragua, you'll be lucky if you'll be alive the next day, or a family member will be dead.
Well, and the right wing in Central America was created, you know, it's a wholly owned subsidiary of Reagan style politics, and you know, to this day we still got the same people who made the death squads happen in Central America are sitting in an air conditioned office inside the Green Zone in Baghdad, and never so much as a charge has been levied against them, Kevin.
But you know, this has been going on from the '50s when you know, in Central America with coffee growing, because a lot of that stuff was American-owned companies, and they didn't want the unions in there.
United Fruit.
Yeah, United Fruit Company.
Sure.
And, you know, and people really need to look at what really pacified Germany, Japan, and Italy, the former Axis powers of World War II, was the fact that people saw life under, you know, the life under Americans was better than any fascist dictator.
Yeah, sure. Kevin, do you go back again tomorrow for the teaching gig?
I'm on call every day, so I'll get a call every day, and it's probably be bouncing around from school to school until, you know, I finally get someplace permanent.
Wow. Well, you know, hang in there.
I will, and it's fun. You know, it's still rewarding.
Yeah, it'll be more fun when you've got your own group and you've got the ability to make an educational flow happen from concept to concept, without a doubt. Because until then, on the substitute circuit, man, oh wow, you're just walking in to wow. One hostile situation after another.
Oh, yeah, and you all walking in blind. The first class was kind of hard, but as the day progressed, it got better.
Well, cool. I'm glad you're getting that going. I know you've worked at it for a long, long time, and I'm glad it's working out for you. I'm really, really glad.
All right.
All right, you take care, Kevin. Keep us apprised of the situation as it shakes out, will you?
I will.
All right.
Definitely will.
Bye now. Okay, we're going to have to get to some news. But I you know, have to, because, you know, I get one break an hour. Come on. No, I mentioned this in talking with Kevin, and I wanted to follow up. It was our good friend Larry who sent this along. Sinram importing housing labor from the Huntsville Times in Huntsville, Alabama. The professional broadcaster here. Company looks to poorer countries for legal workers. Sinram has been advertising in Jamaica and other impoverished countries for young people willing to work for $8 an hour plus overtime, packaging the DVDs it makes at its northeast Huntsville, Alabama plant. Lynn Beauregard Fisher, a company spokeswoman in Toronto. Isn't it interesting that Alabama's junior senator is Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions? Lynn Beauregard Fisher, a company spokeswoman in Toronto, confirmed Wednesday that the Canadian company's Huntsville plant plans to recruit about 800 workers from Jamaica and another 550 from the Dominican Republic, Nepal, Bolivia, and Ukraine. Our business is extremely seasonal. Our workforce in our facilities tends to double in the peaks. She's talking about holiday DVD sales. Those temporary resources are not available for us to hire locally because the unemployment rate is very low, 2.7% in Huntsville. So they're going to get people from as far away as Ukraine and Nepal, for the love of God, and bring them to Huntsville and give them $8 an hour jobs. And when they don't want to work them, they just won't work them. And they can starve for all Sinram cares. The new CINRAM employees will be housed in an old apartment complex, homes, and hotels across western Huntsville. They are bused to the plant on Moores Mill Road. For example, Dewey Brazelton, a property owner in Huntsville, said he recently sold the back building of the old Sheraton Inn on University Drive to house CINRAM workers. There's a bunch of foreigners going to be living over there, he told the Huntsville Times. He said they would be employed by CINRAM. Meanwhile, foreign workers are already living in apartments off Drake Avenue and being bused to CINRAM for 12-hour shifts. You know, these are mostly brown people, with the exception of the Ukrainians. This is not going to play well in northeast Alabama. Christine Kelly runs a Jamaican company that finds employees for U.S. companies, told applicants the CINRAM work is grueling and the living conditions very basic. This job does not require you to have any subjects or work experience. It's basically packing DVDs in boxes, and anyone can do that, but you must have the right to work, the right work attitude. You must have the right work attitude, be able to communicate well, and get along with other people, she told the Jamaica Observer. CINRAM has, why do I say that this is not going to go over well? CINRAM has employed a large number of Hispanics in Huntsville. After a pro-immigration march in Huntsville last year, eight cars belonging to Hispanic employees were vandalized while the owners worked inside the building. I'm guessing CINRAM didn't compensate them for those losses. See, this is no difference than different from the old company towns in the turn of the century West Virginia. They're going to own these people. They're going to be as much as 15,000 miles from home, living in overcrowded old hotels, flop houses. They will be bused to and from work. They will be charged for, out of that $8 an hour, they will be charged for their room and board. Wow. Foreign workers are already living in the apartments off Drake Avenue in Huntsville. They're being bused to CINRAM. They work 12-hour shifts. Anybody want to bet that they're not fully compensated for all 12 hours? This is because there are jobs in America that Americans won't do. You know, I gotta imagine that it's pretty damn dull and grueling stuffing DVDs in boxes and running them through the shrink wrap machine. Still, I'll bet you there are people in North Alabama that would do those jobs, and I don't want to be perceived as in any wise xenophobic about this. The fact of the matter is, the reason CINRAM is going out and getting these people and bringing them so far away from their own homes to do this work is it allows them to have far greater control over their basic necessities of existence. Oh, what's that, cum fop? You say you don't like working 12-hour days and getting paid for eight? Huh, how about that? Looks like ain't going to be no money on your paycheck this week, boy. You owe us back for room and board we done give you that you ain't paid for. Hit the bricks. Good luck getting home. We'll be calling the immigration service. This is a worker issue. This is not a white issue or a black issue or a Hispanic issue or a Nepalese issue or a Ukrainian issue. All over the world, there are businesses just like the one that finds employees in Jamaica for U.S. companies. And they don't give a tinker's damn what happens to the people once they get here. They are merely supplying living meat. Of course, you know what the workers at CINRAM need. Workers at CINRAM damned well need a union, don't they? Yeah. Yeah, they do. So, we'll take a We'll take a little break and come back after the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. We are listener-supported. We're trying to raise $3,500 this month. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. It sure would be nice if we did, and I sure would appreciate it. News is next, right here on The Horn.
Sombrero, escucha entonces cuando digo, no me llames frijolero, ya que existe algún respeto, no metamos las narices, no que inflamos la moneda, haciendo guerra a otros países, te pagamos con petróleo, interestes es nuestra deuda, mientras tanto no sabemos qué se queda con la feria, a que nos hagan la fama de que somos vendedores de la droga que sembramos, ustedes son consumidores. Don't call me gringo, you fucking beaner, stay on your side of the goddamn river, don't call me gringo, you beaner. No me digas beaner, Mr. Puñetero, te sacaré un susto por racista culero. No me llames frijolero, pinche gringo puñetero. No, I wish I had a dime for every single time I've gotten stared down for being in the wrong side of town. In a rich man I'd be if I had that kind of chip. Lately I wanna smack the mouths of these racists. Podrás imaginarte desde afuera, ser un mexicano cruzando la frontera, pensando tu familia mientras que pasas, dejando todo lo que tú conoces atrás. Tuvieras tú que esquivar las balas de unos cuantos gringos rancheros, les seguirás diciendo good for nothing, wet back. Si tuvieras tú que empezar de cero. Now why don't you look down on where your feet is planted? The U.S. soil that makes you take shit for granted. If not for Santa Ana, just to let you know that where your feet are planted would be Mexico. Correcto! Don't call me gringo, you fucking beaner. Stay on your side of that goddamn river. Don't call me gringo, you beaner. No me digas beaner, Mr. Puñetero. Te sacaré un susto por racista y culero. No me llames frijolero, pinche gringo puñetero.
This is the Quality News Network. Residents of Oregon and Washington State are busy cleaning up after a pre-winter storm swept over the region, dropping several inches of rain and serving up hurricane-force winds. Meantime, heavy snowfall is blanketing the Northeast, the weather being blamed for at least 16 deaths. President Bush says all options remain on the table in dealing with Iran and its uranium enrichment program. Despite a new U.S. intelligence report that indicates Iran halted its nuclear weaponry program back in 2003, Mr. Bush says Iran still remains a danger. President Bush says he'll veto a new congressional law toughening fuel standards for cars. It is the first change for fuel standards in 30 years. The legislation is designed to decrease greenhouse gas emissions and increase fuel efficiency. U.S. nuclear negotiator Christopher Hill meeting with his North Korean counterpart today. Yesterday, Hill became the highest-ranking American to visit Pyongyang's reactor. 5 National Guard brigades, about 15,000 soldiers, being called up for combat tours scheduled to start in the summer of 2009, going to Iraq are units from Wisconsin, Mississippi, and Oregon. Afghanistan assignments going to units from Georgia and Florida. Afghanistan's defense chief told America's defense chief today the Afghani military is under-equipped and under-trained. Robert Gates conceded 2,000 to 3,000 more military trainers are needed. This morning in Kabul, a suicide bomber targeting a nearby NATO convoy wounded at least 22 civilian passers-by. In southwest Afghanistan, a suicide bomber detonated himself near a police patrol, killing 4 and wounding another 7. North of Baghdad, the U.S. military says soldiers accidentally killed 1 civilian, wounded 3 others yesterday. American troops opened fire on a vehicle slow to stop at a roadblock. A commercial passenger jet has taken off from the Mosul airport for the first time in 14 years. The resumption of civilian air travel to and from the northern Iraqi city seen as a significant step toward normalization of that region. And a British school teacher imprisoned in Sudan for violating Islamic law, now back at home in London. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll be back right after this message.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
A new international study indicates worldwide food prices are set to rise for the first time in more than 30 years. The report blames global warming and increased consumption from developing countries like China and India. Policies of the U.S. credit card industry being reviewed by Congress, lawmakers and consumer advocates criticize the common practice of raising a customer's interest rate when their credit score falls, even when that same customer continues to pay his monthly bill on time. Shares of Genentech fell more than 3.5%. That's after the FDA criticized the use of the company's cancer drug, Avastin. The federal agency says using Avastin didn't really help women with breast cancer, but did comparatively result in serious side effects. eBay and Yahoo Japan signing an agreement today to work together on a plan making it easier for Japanese customers to participate in online auctions. General Motors reporting its November sales falling 11%. That's the same amount by which GM will cut its production next quarter. Shares dropped 4% at the announcement. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $88.32 a barrel. Gold at $807.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 65 points to end at 13,248, NASDAQ down 17, the S&P 500 off 9. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, it's half past. Well, we're half past the show is what we're half past. It's 30 minutes past 7 o'clock here on the eastern seaboard. 4:30, I guess, on the Pacific coast. And just because I'm trying to teach myself to do this, it's 11:30 in Sydney, Australia in the morning. And we will go right to the phones in just a second. A quick programming note for you coming up at shortly after, well, right after the news, right after the 8 o'clock news, my time, of course. We will be joined by Rob Boston from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. That group released a bit of information today. It would appear that Jerry Falwell Jr. is following right merrily along in his old daddy's footsteps by, you know, violating federal law. Not that that ever mattered to the Falwells, but we might as well at least alert people to it, because God knows NBC, CBS, ABC, and none of the alphabet soup organizations, with the possible exception of Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, will ever mention this. So the only way it's going to get out is if the new media gets it out there, and we are certainly part of that, a big part of that. Susan has been waiting, and we go to her now on the phone. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program. Thanks.
Hi there. By the way, if anybody, Rob has written three books, and if anybody wants to buy them, just go to the show post and click on the picture of the covers, and you can buy them through the Horn store thereby.
Wonderful. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay. You have a talent for picking subjects today, don't you?
Well, it wasn't very difficult. Honest to Pete, it wasn't.
Yeah.
They're all just right there over the middle of the plate and headed for the fence.
Yeah, about that soldier, first of all. Is he still in combat?
Yes. He is and has been in Afghanistan on active duty for almost 2 years now.
I sincerely hope once he was notified, he went to his base, laid down his weapon, and told them where they could put their orders.
But, of course, he didn't. Because,
in other words, he's more honorable than they are.
You know, there's more honor in that young man than there is in an entire platoon of Icemen. They know no honor, the ice.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? Maybe that should be brought up at his hearing. As regards to the workers, you said they needed a union. Yeah, they do. They ain't going to ever get one.
Not in Alabama, they're not. No, ma'am. Sorry.
No.
Next question.
Because all they'd have to do to bust it up is make one phone call to the Iceman, of course.
Well, no. No. These are going to be completely legal immigrants. These aren't the kind of people that Tom Tancredo hates. This is a multi-million, if not multi-billion dollar industry, Susan.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And the other thing that you remind me of mentioning is that these people are going to be paid $8 an hour plus overtime.
Uh-huh.
Guess what? They will sign an agreement before they ever leave Nepal, the Ukraine, the Dominican Republic.
Waiving that.
No, they won't be waiving their salary. They will be promising a portion thereof to the person who's getting them to the United States.
Oh, I'm sure. But isn't their green card contingent on their employment?
I'm sure it is.
So if they want to bust a union, all they got to do is place a phone call saying, this guy's no longer employed. Bam, he's gone.
Well, it's not quite as simple as that, but I understand what you're getting at. If they were to try to organize a union, they would at least have some protection. And, you know, frankly, if you think about the successes that have been had in the South, I would hope that maybe some organizer for the SEIU might take note of this situation and work on organizing that plant. Of course, organizing is a hard job, and it takes a hell of a lot of courage. And, the reason you're going for, people who speak different languages, you know, Nepalese, Russian, Ukrainian, whatever, English from Jamaica, maybe Creole French from Haiti or the Dominican Republic. Well, it's almost straight out of the Old Testament. You know, you split everybody up and cause confusion because nobody can understand anybody else. It's Tower of Babel stuff.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah. So that means that anybody...
Classic.
Right.
It's just, you scumbags. I mean, just, Oh, and I don't care who it is that gets into the White House. If whoever it is if one of the first things that they do is not the Employee Free Choice Act, I am going to give them hell.
Well, that has to start in the Congress, though. I mean, if they can say, if they'll say that they want it, then the Congress can move on it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If when there's a Democrat in the White House and we have a Democratic Congress, they got no more excuses.
No, no, they don't. Remember, the Employee Free Choice Act was killed deader than a stone, not by a Bush veto, but by a minority filibuster. The same filibuster that they threatened Harry Reid, they threatened to take away from Harry Reid, they use joyfully and frequently against him now.
Yeah, and I had damn well better see this thing passed as soon as we get a Democrat in the White House, or there's going to be hell to pay.
Well, I would like to, I'd like to see something similar, and granted, it can't happen because it's not the same system. It can't happen exactly the same way, but I'd like to see something similar happen to what John Fox was talking about Kevin Rudd doing once he took power in Australia. He was no sooner prime minister than he was gone. You know, whoops, got to go ratify Kyoto.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that kind of an attitude being held in the White House.
Swear in the Senate and then say, okay, Senate, time to ratify Kyoto. Bam.
Yeah. And, you know, time to pass employee free choice. Time for this, time for that. Time to get rid of don't ask, don't tell. Get with it.
Yeah, get your butt in gear. You've been wasted over a decade. Time to get off the pot.
Hard work to be done and just very short time a period of time to get it done in, right?
Oh God, ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. It's like a Jerry come on. Smokey and the Bandit, long way to go and a short time to get there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, I shall let the other callers come in, and you have a nice evening. You and Agnes.
All right. Thank you very kindly, Susan. And we'll be talking soon.
Okie doke.
All right. Bye now.
I wasn't going to call in today, but you insisted on having something just...
Well, you know, I hope I can get in here and light a fire under somebody every blessed night, and you know, even when you're not planning on it.
Okay, good night.
All right, take care, Susan. Bye bye. And let's see who we've got. Who we've got here? Ah, busy signal. Oh well. Now, just to get back to some of the stuff that is that I want to hit before we start talking to talking about this Falwell business. You do know that the Guantanamo manual is out, right? Available online, according to the Washington Post today. A leaked copy of the March 2004 manual of Guantanamo's standard operating procedures for Camp Delta was published by WikiLeaks.org. It is, for all intents and purposes, everything that a guard at Gitmo would need to know, from how to remove a detainee's clothing when they first arrive. Dig it. You have been spirited across the world. You arrive in Cuba, and a Gitmo guard cuts your clothing off of you. The manual includes information for what guards should do if they find a detainee's plastic foam cup with writing on it. They confiscate it. The guards are told that rolls of toilet paper are considered comfort items that can be given to detainees as rewards. Sit, Rover! Sit! And I'll give you toilet paper. Sit! What have we become? What in the hell is wrong with us? You know, do you remember, this is a little bit gross, but you'll get the point. Do you remember the old Chuck Connor TV series called Branded about a cavalry officer unjustly accused of doing some wrong thing, so they drum him out and they show him having the buttons busted off of his coat and his markings of rank pulled away, and they, at the very end, they take his cavalry saber and break it in two and give him back the broken hilt. And there was this stirring anthem that began in Branded, the song. Well, you know, being little kids, there was a little kid's parody song that we all learned. You know, that's what the public school system is for, so you can learn things like On Top of Spaghetti and, you know, Nobody Likes Me, Everybody Hates Me, I'm Going to Eat a Worm. And there was a song called that we learned called Stranded. I'm not going to sing, but I'll tell you the lyrics. Stranded, stranded on the toilet bowl. What do you do when you're stranded and you don't have a roll? To prove you're a man, you will wipe with your hand because you're free, stranded. I didn't do that gratuitously. Information contained in the SOP, rolls of toilet paper are considered comfort items that can be given to detainees as rewards. Gosh, what do you do until you work up reward points so you can get a roll of Charmin from your friendly Gitmo concentration camp guard? Kind of makes you wonder. Much of the manual deals with how to treat detainees, with one section discussing how to handle their personal items. If items are damaged, for example, guards are directed to punish the detainee. With regard to linen items such as blankets, clothing, sheets, or towels, the manual says if a detainee tears, rips, or otherwise damages this item or makes it into a weapon or self-harm device, it will be confiscated and the detainee disciplined for damaging or destroying government property. God in heaven, what have we become? The manual discusses the facility's behavior management plan for the first 2 weeks after a detainee's arrival, when he has no access to the International Committee of the Red Cross or a chaplain. The purpose of the behavior management plan is to enhance and exploit the disorientation and disorganization felt by a newly arrived detainee in the interrogation process, the manual says, quote, it concentrates on isolating the detainee and fostering dependence of the detainee on his interrogator. Yeah, that is good, yeah. Let's see if we've got somebody on the phone here. Ah, that's a busy signal. And so is that. Navy Commander Rick Haupt, a Guantanamo spokesman, said officials received a copy of the manual yesterday and are trying to authenticate it. WikiLeaks.org also published a copy of the 2003 Gitmo manual last month. They are marked for official use only, meaning that you, me, citizens of the Republic, are not supposed to see it. Don't know why, because it doesn't contain any sensitive, top-secret, double-secret, probation kind of information. It just shows the inhuman conduct that is engaged in. Damaging government property, you see, because it's not their damn blanket, it's not their sheet, it's not their toilet paper, you see, it's not their styrofoam cup. In the 2004 manual, guards are warned not to teach the detainees songs or English phrases and not to take an active role in interrogations or to even listen to what is said during interrogations. They're also told not to talk about current events. Quote, do not, one, discuss current world events or history with detainees or within earshot of detainees that could upset or influence detainee actions or attitudes, such as the situation in the Middle East, the destruction of the space shuttle, or information concerning terrorist groups or personnel. Good God. Navy Commander Rick Haupt said, "It's not typically considered a threat to national security. This type of unclassified information could give the enemy an edge up on how we do business, so they in turn can develop their own tactics, techniques, and procedures to train against us." Yeah, because, you know, that goat herd on the eastern slopes in Afghanistan, he's going to start working on his, his ascetic techniques for going, I don't know, like a Vulcan, slowing his heart rate to almost dead so that... My God, what a bunch of paranoid jackasses. It also speaks of detainees, you know, concentration camp prisoners, spending time in segregation cells, either as punishment or for intelligence gathering purposes. It's 250 pages, this document. It gives details about the daily operations of the facilities in the days before the Abu Ghraib abuse scandal broke. Oh, there's just lots and lots of fun information in this little manual. WikiLeaks.org if you want to read all 250 pages. It also describes the behavior management plan. Yeah, because the concentration camp detainee has no access to the International Committee of the Red Cross or even so much as a chaplain. Those are the 2 weeks in which they do everything in their power to utterly break the mind of a man whom they are not sure at that point in time whether he is guilty or innocent. Break him first. Nah, I can't imagine why anybody would hate America after stuff like that. Well, see, they're helping the enemy by putting it out there. See, they didn't know we was doing none of this until some liberal put it out there. Why do they hate America? Why do they want to put that manual out there? Jiminy. You know, there's reason number one for why not to have another Republican president in the White House. Because this crap will just go on and on and on and on until somebody takes an active role in stopping it. Now, I know how some people feel about some of the Democratic candidates. I'm not going to discuss that right now. But I will tell you that you have zero chance of changing these abusive, hateful, treaty-violating practices. You have a zero possibility of changing those practices with, Romney or Giuliani or Mike Huckabee or McCain. Zero chance. Zero. Mathematical absolute zero, okay? But there is a possibility with a Democrat in the White House, any of them, Obama, Clinton, Edwards, Kucinich, Richardson, Dodd, Biden, there's at least a chance of stopping this evil and making this evil a part of our past and not of our future. That's reason enough to put someone different in the White House, don't you think? Because I honestly don't... I don't know what's... I'll tell you. I mean, you know... I'm not going to sit here and do that Limbaugh shtick of telling you, broadcasting with one half my brain tied behind my back. I'm not going to do that. I'm not stupid. I'm capable of fairly solid analytical thought. I'm pretty well educated. But I am guilty of leading on this program with my heart and not necessarily leading with my intellect. Because nobody wants to listen to somebody sound like he thinks he's smarter than everybody else. I don't think that. I know that my audience is largely smarter than me. So you've done the analysis. You've done the skull sweat part. What we need to work out, though, is the why and the wherefore and the right and the wrong of it. And if it is, in fact, wrong, how we stop the wrong. Friday night during the Front Porch edition of the program, I mentioned to our good friend Preston in Denver that I wanted to share something with you, and I want to share it with you now before we get to the top of the hour. It is from a book that I would recommend to any and all of you by Paul Hawken, H-A-W-K-E-N. It's called Blessed Unrest. And when things like, you know, sicking dogs, which is included in the 2004 manual that we were talking about, sicking dogs on unarmed, bound, defenseless prisoners, when things like that, and you know, just in any and all of the various and sundry vicious vitriolic evil that flows in a ceaseless river of gore and filth out of this administration, when that, it begins to grind on you after a while, doesn't it? Sure it does. Well, I've read this book through at least once and parts of it several times, and I just happened to I had sort of dog-eared the page. I know, bad book reader, bad dog-earing, but I highlighted this this passage out of Blessed Unrest, subtitle, How the Largest Movement in the World Came into Being and Why No One Saw It Coming, because it sort of grabbed me, and I think it might speak to you too. Paul Hawken writes, David James Duncan penned, and this is from page 187 of the hardback, David James Duncan penned a response to the hostile takeover of Christianity by fundamentalists with advice that applies to all fundamentalisms. The people of the world do not need religious fanatics to save them any more than they need oleaginous free trade hucksters to do so. They need us for their salvation, and us stands for the crazy quilt assemblage of global humanity that is willing to stand up to the raw, cancerous insults that come from the mouths, guns, checkbooks, and policies of ideologues. Because the movement is not merely trying to prevent wrongs, but actively seeks to love the world. Compassion and love of others are at the heart of all religions and at the heart of this movement. When small things are done with love, it's not a flawed you or me who does them, it's love. I have no faith in any political party, left, right, or centrist. I have boundless faith in love. In keeping with this faith, the only spiritually responsible way I know to be a citizen, artist, or activist in these strange times is by giving little or no thought to great things such as saving the planet, achieving world peace, or stopping neocon greed. Great things tend to be undoable things, whereas small things, lovingly done, are always within our reach. Some people think the movement is defined primarily by what it is against, but the language of the movement is first and foremost about keeping the conversation going. Wow, where have you heard that before? Because ideas that inform it never end. Growth without inequality, wealth without plunder, work without exploitation, a future without fear. To answer the policeman's question, these people are reimagining the world. To salve the world's wounds demands a response from the heart. There is a world of hurt out there. And to heal the past requires apologies, reconciliation, reparation, and forgiveness. A viable future isn't possible until the past is faced objectively and communion is made with our errant history. I suspect that just about everyone owes an apology and merits one, but there are races, cultures and people that are particularly deserving. The idea that we cannot apologize to former enslaved and first peoples for past inequities because we are not the ones who perpetrated the evil misses the point. By receiving sorrow, hearing admissions, allowing reparation, and participating in reconciliation, people and tribes whose ancestors were abused give new life to all of us in the world we share. Making amends is the beginning of the healing of the world. These spiritual deeds and acts of moral imagination lay the groundwork for the great work ahead. The movement is not coercive, but it is relentless and unafraid. It cannot be mollified, pacified, or suppressed. There can be no Berlin Wall moment, no treaty to sign, no morning to awaken to when the superpowers agree to stand down. This is a movement away from the maximization of anything that is not conducive to life. It will continue to take myriad forms. It will not rest. There will be no Marx, Alexander, or Kennedy to lead it. No book can explain it. No person can represent it. No group can stand at its forefront. No words can encompass it, because the movement is the breathing, sentient testament of the living world. The movement is an outgrowth of apostasies, and it is now self-generating. The first cells that assembled and metabolized under the most difficult of circumstances deep in the ocean nearly 40 million centuries ago are in our bodies now, and we are, in Mary Oliver's words, determined as they were then to save the only life we can. Life can occur only in a cell, and a cell is where all disease starts as well. In Franklin Harold's book, The Way of the Cell, he points out that for all its hard-bitten rationalism, molecular science asks us to accept a real humdinger that all organisms have descended from a single ancestral cell. This quivering, gelatinous, sensate moat is the core of everything we cherish and places us in direct relation to every other form of life. That primordial connection, so incomprehensible to some, yet so manifest and sacred and incontestable to others, links us inseparably to our common fate. The first gene was the password to all subsequent forms of life, and the word gene has the same etymological root as the words kin, kind, genus, generous, and nature. It is our nature to cultivate life, and this movement is a collective kindness produced over the course of 4 million millennia. I believe this movement will prevail. I don't mean it will defeat, conquer, or create harm to someone else. Quite the opposite. I don't tender the claim in an oracular sense. I mean that the thinking that informs the movement's goals will reign. It will soon suffuse most institutions, but before then, it will change a sufficient number of people so as to begin the reversal of centuries of frenzied, self-destructive behavior. Some say it is too late, but people never change when they are comfortable. Helen Keller threw aside the gnawing fears of chronic bad news when she declared, "I rejoice to live in such a splendidly disturbing time." In such a time, history is suspended and thus unfinished. It will be the stroke of midnight for the rest of our lives. So I ran across that a few days ago, and I was just all burned up to share it with you. It will be the stroke of midnight for the rest of our lives. And don't approach that fact with some level of grieving. Approach it with the excitement that comes with your opportunity not to change great things, but to change one thing. It will be the stroke of midnight for the rest of our lives. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Give me all the earth and sky, and at the same time add a new dimension. Half the truth is of no use. Give it all. Give
This is the Quality News Network. Speaking from the White House today, President Bush says he'll veto a new congressional law toughening fuel standards for cars, the first change in fuel standards in 30 years. The legislation is designed to decrease greenhouse gas emissions and increase fuel efficiency. Mr. Bush also says all options remain on the table in dealing with Iran and its uranium enrichment program. Despite a new U.S. intelligence report that indicates Iran halted its nuclear weaponry program back in 2003, Mr. Bush says Iran still remains a danger. France and Britain also say pressure must be maintained on Tehran. Iranian leaders say the U.S. intelligence report shows that America and the West should ease up on their country's efforts to enrich uranium for energy purposes. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates is asking countries around the world to help in fighting a growing extremist threat in Afghanistan. On a surprise visit to Kabul today, Gates met with President Hamid Karzai, who told Gates that attacks are increasing daily and that Afghani forces are undertrained and under-equipped, especially the Air Force. This morning in Kabul, a suicide bomber targeting a nearby NATO convoy wounded at least 22 civilian passers-by. In southwest Afghanistan, a suicide bomber detonated himself near a police patrol, killing four and wounding another seven. Five National Guard brigades, that's about 15,000 soldiers, have been called up for combat tours set to start in summer of 2009. Units from Wisconsin, Mississippi, and Oregon will head to Iraq. Units from Georgia and Florida will be assigned to Afghanistan. A Saudi researcher says there are an estimated 5,600 websites spreading al-Qaeda ideology worldwide. 900 more related websites appear each year. Al-Qaeda sites often change addresses or start up again elsewhere to avoid detection. Captors holding five Britons hostage demanded that Britain pull all its forces from Iraq, posting a videotape showing a haggard victim more than 6 months after his group was abducted. And former Democratic fundraiser Norman Shea, indicted by federal grand jury for swindling investors in a $60 million fraud scheme and making illegal donations to political campaigns. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Behaving in a civil manner is the foundation of a civilized society. The Roman philosopher and emperor Marcus Aurelius said, "The happiness of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. If you think in a civil tone, you will reflect civility to others. When we are civil, we aren't at war. We aren't fighting. When we are civil, there is no crime. When we are civil, we enrich the lives of all the people we meet. When we are civil, we are healthier and happier." The Russian author Leo Tolstoy wrote, "Happiness does not depend on outward things, but on the way we see them. It is our choice to be civil rather than hostile or aloof. Sharing our inherent goodness contributes to the common weal in a way that benefits not only our society, but ourselves, deeply, importantly, and eternally." For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
An international study released this morning says worldwide food prices are set to rise for the first time in more than 30 years. The report blames global warming and increased consumption from developing countries like China and India. Policies of the U.S. credit card industry being reviewed by Congress. Lawmakers and consumer advocates criticize the common practice of raising a customer's interest rate when their credit score falls, even when that same customer continues to pay his monthly bill on time. eBay and Yahoo Japan signing an agreement today to work together on a plan making it easier for Japanese customers to participate in online auctions. Ford shares fell 3.5% when it also announced poor November sales and an upcoming quarterly cut in production of 7%. Congressional Democrats say they're close to forging a compromise proposal requiring automobile and electric companies to increase the use of renewable fuels. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $88.32 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down nearly 66 points to end at 13,248. The Nasdaq down 17 points at 2619. S&P 500 down 9 points at 1462. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You betcha. And we are going to start off hour number three with a real bang. On the phone with me right now, I'll bring him on just in a second, as quick as I've told you a little bit about him. Rob Boston from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. One of the organizations that I have more admiration for than just about any other out there, truly doing, if you will, God's work for the Constitution of the United States. Rob is the Assistant Director of Communications for Americans United. He's also Assistant Editor of Church and State Magazine, has been since about 1987. And, of course, you know the work of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. They're very, very zealous advocates of that concept, separation between the church and the state, whether it be the church influencing state policies or the state lording it over the church. And I, you know, as someone who fears that the First Amendment has been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry, I view the work of Americans United as very, very important. Rob is also an author, Why the Religious Right is Wrong About Separation of Church and State, The Most Dangerous Man in America, Pat Robertson and the Rise of the Christian Coalition, and Close Encounters with the Religious Right, Journeys into the Twilight Zone of Religion and Politics. That sounds like something I'd be afraid to read late at night. But at any rate, if you click on the pictures of the book at the show post for this evening's program, you'll be taken to a place where you can buy all those books, should you be so moved. Right now, however, let's welcome Rob Boston to the program. Rob, thank you so much for taking some time to do the show this evening, especially since you're off the clock, as it were.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Bob.
It is a real pleasure to talk with you, and I'm entirely sincere when I talk about the admiration that I have for Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You put out a press release today, Rob. Basically, it looks like father, like son. Jerry Falwell Jr. is out there flogging the IRS code regarding the endorsement of political candidates, isn't he?
That's right. The IRS code does allow people who run nonprofits like Jerry Falwell Jr., who runs Liberty University, to endorse candidates as private individuals, but they're not supposed to use the resources of the nonprofit to further that endorsement. And that's, in fact, what Falwell has done. He's announced his support for the candidacy of Mike Huckabee, and he blasted that to the world on the letterhead of Liberty University, which I think reading the IRS regulations is a pretty clear no-no. So we've asked the IRS to take a look at that.
Not to seem like a wet blanket or anything, given the fact that it's the Bush administration, what chance do you think you've got of the IRS actually doing that?
Well, the IRS has certainly been talking tough lately. They put out statements saying that they're cracking down on the abuses that are occurring, that churches and other nonprofits are not supposed to be endorsing candidates or opposing candidates. So they're saying the right things, and I would hope that the days of the IRS being used as a political weapon, you know, went out with Richard Nixon. So I'm hopeful that they'll take this seriously. Looking at the IRS guidelines and materials that they put out on their own website, this does look like a pretty clear violation.
What would happen if the IRS were to investigate and find out that you were right about what Jerry Falwell Jr. has done? What would happen to him or to Liberty University or the church that he runs, whoever was associated with this with this action?
Well, this is Jerry Falwell Jr., who's chancellor of Liberty University, and he's not a minister. So what would happen is that there are a couple things the IRS could do. You know, at the lowest level, they could just give him a warning, basically a slap on the wrist and say, look, you violated the law. We'll let you skate this time. Don't do it again. They might even make him sign, you know, documents to the effect that he'll promise to follow the law. They've done that before in other cases. A little more serious would be revocation of tax-exempt status for Liberty University. That would be very serious because the people who donate to Liberty University are allowed, obviously, to write that off on their taxes if they're itemizing, and they would lose that ability because it would no longer be a tax-exempt entity. An even more serious step would be a fine or a penalty of some kind. The IRS does have that power. So there are a number of things the agency could do, and we're just, you know, what they want to do is up to them. We just want them to take a look at this and stop these abuses.
And this all has to do with a December 1st, 2007, Liberty News alert that, as you noted, came out under the letterhead of Liberty University. What the language at stake I have here in front of me, thanks to your press release, Rob. Recently, this is what Jerry Falwell Jr. wrote. Recently, Governor Mike Huckabee called to brief me on the progress of his campaign for the presidency. I invited the governor to speak to the Liberty University students in convocation on November 28th. He graciously accepted. I was so impressed with the governor's sincerity and his positions on the issues that are important to conservative Christians that I personally endorsed Governor Huckabee before he left Lynchburg. Word personally there. But he goes on and says, my father strongly supported Governor Huckabee when no one thought that he had any chance to succeed in the presidential race. I believe with all my heart that if my father had witnessed Governor Huckabee's surge in the polls and his ascension to first place in the Iowa polls, he would have endorsed Governor Huckabee without hesitation. So at that point, he's endorsing from the grave, isn't he? And he's gone beyond any sort of personal endorsement.
He's actually gone to endorse Huckabee on behalf of his dead father as well, so it's a dual endorsement. But where he really ran afoul of things here was issuing all of this from the Chancellor's Office of Liberty University on letterhead, and he did a blitz email on this kind of thing. And at the same time, he went on to point readers to an article that was in an online publication that Liberty runs, talking about how Huckabee's the greatest guy and how he's even God's appointed candidate, all this kind of thing. You know, the IRS is very clear. You really have to be careful with this sort of thing. If you're going to do a personal endorsement, you need to do it away from the nonprofit that you run. You can't use any of the nonprofit's materials. You can't put it in an official publication of the nonprofit. You can't use letterhead. The guidelines are pretty clear. And what really kind of surprises me about this is that Jerry Falwell Sr. Had problems with the IRS himself. His old-time gospel hour once actually had its tax exemption revoked retroactively for 2 years for endorsing candidates in the congressional race. So there's a family history of this, and you would think Jerry Falwell Jr. would be aware of that and would avoid the similar mistakes that his father made.
Yeah, but the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, though, Rob.
You're right, I think.
let me ask you this. When we consider organizations like this, it seems self-evident to me why you wouldn't want this sort of intermingling, but can you give a little background on the necessity for keeping the politicking out of the pulpit?
Yes, exactly. First of all, I should point out that this is a provision found in the federal tax code. It's not in the Constitution. It could be changed, it could be altered, it could be done away with, but for now it exists in the federal tax code. It was inserted in there in the 1950s by Lyndon Johnson, who at that time was a senator. Johnson had been attacked during one of his campaigns by some charities in Texas, and they were tax-exempt, and here they were coming after him. And he felt, quite rightly, I think, that a tax-exempt entity should not be involved in politics in that way. So he proposed this revision to the tax code. It was agreed upon. The Senate passed it. It's been part of the code ever since. And I should point out that it applies to all the groups holding a 501c3 designation, whether they are religious or secular. It also applies to, you know, liberal groups as much as it applies to conservative groups. I'll be honest with you, Bob. I read about and I hear about and I see things happening in more liberal churches that are disturbing as well. And we've asked the IRS to look into some of those, too, in the past. I mean, I'm not going to give the Democrats a pass here.
No. That's no. I understand.
Some of the campaigning that goes on in churches and rallies, that's really inappropriate. So we're equal opportunity here when it comes to applying this
provision. Sure. Well, you know, I wonder sometimes, and you know, we're fascinated and focused on things like radio. I was doing some research recently, Rob, and I noticed that Pacifica Radio is their foundation is a 501c3, and I just sort of sat there staring at that in sort of mute amazement, wondering how they could. You know, there's nobody more political out there than Pacifica Radio.
Right. Well, you can be political to a certain extent as long as you remain focused on issues. If you look at the ministry that Jerry Falwell ran, and now that his son, Jerry Falwell Jr., and his other son, Jonathan Falwell, are running, it's a very political ministry. You know, it's anti-abortion, it's anti-gay, it's, you know, anti-immigrant, it's anti lots of things. And they can do that. They can speak out on issues all they want. What the provision states in the IRS code is that you can't take the additional step of endorsing or opposing a candidate or linking an issue to a candidate. And the IRS is clear, it's more than just the pastor standing up in a pulpit saying, I think you should vote for, you know, Senator X. It's more than that. It's other types of statements and its actions as well.
That seems like that could get very, very slippery along the way, Rob.
Well, it can. The IRS, to its credit, has tried to flesh this out as much as it can. If you look at the website, they give a lot of detailed examples of the types of things that are permitted and types of things that are not permitted. And I would think somebody like Jerry Falwell Jr., you know, he probably has a few attorneys working for him.
Yeah, a couple.
Who can advise him in this area. So for him to have taken a step like this, I can only conclude that this is, you know, kind of a, you know, I'm going to do what I want and what are you going to do about it type stand.
Well, so how do we differentiate, for instance, between what Jerry Falwell Jr. has done with this thing that went out under the letterhead of Liberty University, versus, say, the little dog and pony show that we had from Pat Robertson a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, big splashy thing all over the network news, you know, Pat Robertson endorses Rudy Giuliani.
Right. That's a good question. And actually, you know, as strange as Robertson is, and I wrote a whole book about him, so I know he can be pretty strange, he's savvy enough to know better than to violate the law in this area. Robertson went to the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., so he removed himself from his own nonprofit network, He endorsed Giuliani. He made it clear he was speaking as a private citizen, and he was not endorsing on behalf of his Christian Broadcasting Network. He did not use any of the money from CBN. He didn't issue a statement on letterhead. He didn't, you know, do a blitz email from the CBN. He did it as an individual, which he has the right to do. So if you can compare the behavior of the two, you see Robertson kind of doing things in the right way and Falwell Jr. not.
But isn't there, Rob, isn't there a little bit of a nudge and a wink there? I mean, surely to goodness, CBN talked about that endorsement on their so-called news program, didn't they?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that they did. And certainly there is some leeway for reporting that you can do in an objective way. Like, you know, our organization, Americans United, we're C3 as well. We can write about what the candidates are saying about the issues that concern us. We just can't portray it in such a way that, you know, this implies that one is better than the other. This is the one you should support. We can write about the types of things that are being said about these candidates. You just have to be careful not to take that additional step of instructing people about who they should or should not support in the voting booth.
Like saying that God has personally anointed Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, that's kind of a giveaway right there.
You know, I would expect an anointing from God Almighty to be attended with, you know, lightning or, you know, rainbows or, you know, something otherworldly instead of just a, you know, a tawdry little press release from Liberty University.
What else is confusing is that I'm sure somewhere out there there's another minister who has said that somebody else is God's anointed candidate. So.
Well, the funniest thing, I was talking on the program last night. I've seen video, I forget which conservative conclave it was, but a video of Mike Huckabee standing up and taking a cell phone call. He'd been introduced to do the invocation, taking a cell phone call that was us and carrying on a dialogue on a cell phone with a person that he represented to the audience to be Almighty God.
Well, that sounds interesting.
And
I missed that one.
It's a beautiful thing. If you go two or three pages back in crooksandliars.com, you'll find it, and you'll just sit there with your little mouth hanging open catching flies because it's just amazing. Not in 2007, 21st century, and the phone calls from God. But Rob, this is, I kid and so forth, but this is very, very serious business because people take, many, many Americans take their religion, shall we say, straight without a chaser. And as such, they attach great weight to what comes out of the pulpit. So as guardians of the First Amendment separation of church and state, you've got to focus on things like that, don't you?
I do think it's important. You know, and there are a couple of reasons why. One is what you just said, you know, the idea that, you know, we don't want to have a situation whereby our laws or our society is based on pronouncements of religious leaders because, you know, those can vary from religion to religion. And there are many different ways of interpreting the Bible, as we all know. And then there are non-Christian faiths that, you know, have a different perspective entirely. Another reason, too, is that that's not the job of the church. The church has a role to play in society, but it's not handing down a list of endorsements. And whenever that is brought into the church, I think there's a potential there for division and discord. You know, a pastor may think that everybody in the congregation or most people are on the same page. But especially when you're in a primary season like this, you're going to find people falling behind, lining up behind a lot of different candidates for a lot of different reasons. And the pastor sort of saying, well, you know, your judgment doesn't matter anymore. I've got the guy you need to support here. It's more than a little bit arrogant.
Arrogant is as good a word as I can think of to use at this given moment. What about statements like what came out, and you guys follow this stuff, so I assume maybe you've seen a lot of it. The statement that came out from, what was it, the American Catholic Bishops a few weeks ago. Now, it's completely within their right to tell the faithful that they will, in fact, burn in hell if they vote for a pro-choice Democrat. I mean, is that okay within 501c3?
No, the Catholic bishops are really good at going right up to the line and, you know, maybe putting half of a toe over it or something. I mean, they've got that down to an art form. Some of the things that individual bishops have done recently I think are problematic, but the bishops on a whole have tried to remain focused on issues and not names. But, you know, when you get into a situation where you have two candidates, let's say you're in a general election, you have two candidates running, one's pro-life, one's pro-choice. If the bishops put out statements saying, well, you can't vote for anybody who's pro-choice, they have in effect endorsed the other candidate. And the IRS says that. It makes that clear. So I think some of the things that they do are very problematic, and it would behoove the IRS to take a little closer look at those.
Okay, so that was a little bit more, that was as disturbing as I found it then. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's very troubling. I really do. I mean, aside from just the legal question, what's interesting, though, is that you find that if you look at the polls in the United States, at least among American Catholics, people feel they like their clergy, they feel good about their church, but they don't really take their advice politically, just like they don't take their advice on not using birth control.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like a fatwa, if you will, to use another religion's phraseology coming down. If you tell them tell a parishioner that he can't have Holy Communion until he's confessed that he voted for John Kerry or something. You know, we had that stuff going on in 2004, and one of the things, I hope you guys are successful, Rob, because it was sickening back then, and it has become more so, it seems, that we're just getting set up for more. I'm talking to you from West Virginia right now, and I remember that West Virginia and Arkansas were the only two states where the Republican National Committee sent this particular flyer in 2004. And the RNC is a 501c3 as well, are they not?
I believe so. That's hard to believe.
I know. Anything Republican being not for profit. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But anyway, this flyer went out to Arkansas and West Virginia because the RNC made an assumption that those were the only two states that were stupid enough to believe what they were asserting in it, to wit, this flyer that said John Kerry is going to take away your Bible.
Yeah, it's funny. It's sad, really. Things never change. That exact same charge was leveled against Thomas Jefferson in 1800.
You're kidding.
Yes, extremely conservative clergy in New England who hated Jefferson because Jefferson was a champion of separation of church and state, sent out flyers saying that if Jefferson were elected, he was an infidel, and that he would round up your Bibles and have them burned. So he wasn't just going to take them, he was going to burn them. Now, it didn't work in Jefferson's case, but you just see these attacks just sort of recycling through American history.
And the thing is, it doesn't require a lot of people to believe in it. You know, just a small percentage. It's like the jungle drums with Harold Ford and Bob Corker back in 2006. You don't need everybody to buy into that, but if you can get 1% of the electorate to do that, you may have swayed an election.
It certainly
worked out that way in that particular Tennessee election, and that's what they were going for in Arkansas and West Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a well-tested political strategy. That's why they use it all the time.
Oh, goodness me. Well, is there anything else coming out of you? Have you seen any more horrors out there that we should be on the lookout for, Rob?
Well, there's always a lot going on, just generally. I mean, one of the things that kind of amazes me is the extent to which religion has just sort of infested this race. And, there's all this talk now about, Mitt Romney's going to give a big religion speech, and there are rumors that the right wing is circulating about Obama, secretly being a Muslim, and Hillary Clinton was asked at one debate what she prays for. And that same debate, John Edwards was asked what was the biggest sin he ever committed. It just amazes me that at a time when, we have some serious issues on our hands, whether it be the war in Iraq or the state of the economy or whatever, so much attention and time is focused on personal religious views of these candidates, which aren't really supposed to affect the policy of the nation.
Well, the Constitution says there shall
be talking about.
The Constitution says there shall be no religious test for holding of office, does it not?
It does. Article 6 says there will be no religious test. But you know what? In this country, I've often argued, we have a de facto religious test. If you are skeptical of religion, if you're an agnostic, if you're an atheist, if you're a humanist, and you come out with that, in most parts of the country, you're finished as a candidate.
De facto? I think it's almost beyond de facto. It's patent, if you will. Well, Rob, I really appreciate you taking time to have a conversation with us. This is the first time we've ever talked, and I certainly hope it will not be the last.
Yeah, please, let's do it again.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
Take care.
You too. Bye now. Rob Boston, Assistant Communications Director for Americans United for Separation of Church and State. An amazing, amazing group, and so well spoken and so well reasoned. Their leader, of course, is Barry Lynn. I'm sure you've read about him with relation to other uprisings of these similar issues. You can go to their website. It's AU.org. AU.org. You know how my tiny mind works. I first saw AU.org this morning, and I thought I was being redirected to something having to do with Auburn. Oh, God, I'm so college footballed out. No, AU.org, AmericansUnited.org, and, you know, keep up with it because they catch this stuff all the time. And this is the... I got a story here. We'll take a little break, but I got a story here about a really creepy thing that has transpired in Massachusetts with regard to a prisoner there. And what I was about to say is, you know, we know how vile we all remember Lee Atwater ginning up Willie Horton. Well, I wonder if we can ask Mitt Romney these self same questions. You'll understand when I get after the story. Let's take a little break real quick, a little musical interlude, if you will. You're listening to listener supported, independent conversation radio. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah.
love smart rock and roll, don't you? XTC, among the smartest rock and roll bands out there, beyond any shadow of a doubt. On the phone with us right now, our good friend Alan, out on the open road. Alan, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob, I was listening to Democracy Now! Today with Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, and they were debating. They had their guest was Lou Dobbs, and it was a pretty hectic debate they had there. Lou Dobbs tried to take over the show.
Well, that Lou Dobbs has an ego the size of Mount Rushmore, so that's not at all surprising. And he has to try to take it over because his positions with regard to immigrants are utterly indefensible.
Yeah, they had a lot of facts that Amy Goodman did, but he didn't say they want to listen to them. And he kept saying they just had a few, and then it sounded like she had a whole bunch of facts for it.
Well, I've never known Amy Goodman to exactly mail it in, but what it turns out that Lou Dobbs has employed oodles and oodles and oodles of so-called illegal aliens or undocumented workers, that sort of thing. In other words, he's just another right-wing hypocrite.
Yeah, I guess so. Sounds like it. I don't know too much about him. I never watched TV.
Well, my CNN has disappeared, so I don't even get to tune in periodically and watch him spew his xenophobia for people with skin slightly, well, lots darker than his pink pasty hide. But that's all his shtick has been since he came back to CNN. You know, he disappeared for a couple of years to go and be head man, I think, at space.com, and once that just sort of tanked, he came back to start this immigrant shtick.
I'd like to know more about that situation in the hospital. It seems like there's a lot of people in Alabama are without jobs.
Oh yeah, but the thing is, they don't want unemployed Alabamians, Alan. They want people that they can absolutely own their lives. You know. Somebody, you know, a native Alabamian might be, as hard as it is to imagine, might decide to get uppity and demand, you know, decent working conditions. They can do anything they want to these immigrants and get away with it, and they know it, Alan.
Yeah. Well, I think I'd like to find out more about that situation. Call my senators and my representatives. Tell other people I know who live in the state about that.
Well, I'd like to, you know, Bud Kramer is the congressman there, and he's supposedly a Democrat. I'd like to know what he thinks about it. Please bear in mind, I have nothing against the immigrants that they're trying to lure to Alabama, but I harbor no fantasies about how these people are going to be treated. If you're going to put somebody up in a tired old, worn-out hotel room, 4 and 5 to a room maybe, and charge them for it, and pay them $8 an hour, it doesn't take too awful long, Alan, to get down to where that's pretty much slave labor now, does it?
I know it. They just charge them for the room and board. But there's a lot of people in Alabama who work for $8 an hour, I imagine.
Yeah. But they get to go home at the end of the day, and that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
These people will never be out from under the shadow of the company. I mean, there's really not a dime's worth of difference between this scenario and something that it took us 50 years of bloodshed and damn near warfare to get rid of in the coal fields.
I'd rather see them hire illegal immigrants in Alabama rather than give people from other countries to come over.
Well, they say that, you know, their excuse is that there's only 2.7% unemployment in Huntsville, so they can't get anybody to work their jobs. Well, if their jobs are that crappy, no wonder. You know, that doesn't mean that you have to go out somewhere else to find workers. That means you make the conditions of your employment better. I mean, doesn't that make sense, Alan? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I thought it was not that hard to move a plant. to do something simple as wrapping up CDs.
Well, and you see, they've got I'm sure they've got the county commission over a barrel, because if the county commission says boo, then this company will say, well, all right, we'll pick this up, we'll pick this here plant up, and we'll take it somewhere that wants our tax dollars. And all of a sudden, the county commission becomes very, very compliant.
Yeah, well, if they just move it to Birmingham, there's a lot of unemployed people in Birmingham.
Oh, well, because, you know, they mean to do this, Alan. This isn't an accident. It's not like they woke up one day and went, well, dang, there just aren't enough workers. They mean for this to be this way.
Yeah, it's like owing your soul to the company store.
Precisely, because they're going to bill them for their food, they're going to bill them for their clothes, they're going to bill them for their room, their board, their power, their water, and there will not be anything left of that $8 an hour plus the so-called overtime by the time they're done. They will have a slave class in laboring in their factory.
And then they couldn't even afford a plane trip back home.
And yeah, and if they raise their voice, then they're out on the street, and, you know, too bad for them.
Did you hear about those people in China making crucifixes for like 20 cents an hour?
Oh, gosh, yeah, and they sell them in the gift shop at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City and various and sundry other places. Oh, yeah, it's going to become absolutely impossible, Alan, for an American citizen to try to participate in the American economy without touching his or her hands to some level of evil. And it's something that we've got to do something about, but frankly, I don't know how you begin to. Unless you just
one of the first,
you know, move.
First thing is,
go ahead.
There's a trade laws. Do away with the trade laws.
Yeah, or stop participating in the economy. But somewhere along the way, you're going to buy some gasoline, and you know that's bloodied up. You can't buy a banana without knowing that that's been bloodied up. Pineapples, same thing. Beans, tomatoes, squash, anything in the produce section at your grocery store that's fresh produce, there's evil attached to it. Same thing with the canned goods. Let's not talk about buying a Smithfield ham, because we all know what goes on in Tar Heel, North Carolina. It's a heck of a quandary, and we should probably do an entire week's worth of programs on nothing but that, Alan. I've got somebody else ringing along the line here, but awful good to hear from you. You keep safe and drive careful. I guess you're out in the middle of some fairly evil weather now, aren't you?
Oh, it's okay right here. I'm in Kentucky. It's not too bad.
Oh, okay.
I'm on the way to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but I tell you what, those winds I can't imagine being a rig like you are and have the winds come through that came through a couple of nights ago. Wow, that was ugly.
I was down south, thank goodness.
Oh, got to dodge it then. All right, well, you take care, Alan. Hope we'll hear from you again soon.
All right, thanks.
Bye. Uh-huh. Bye-bye. And we roll on and find out who we've got here. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Oh, hey, Jim, what's up?
All right, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Listen, let me ask you something. Does the Horn enjoy any type of tax relief or...
No.
You don't...
Are you asking, are we a 501c3? No, we're not.
So you get no tax breaks whatsoever?
No.
You had mentioned Pacifica Radio.
Right.
But they do.
The foundation that runs the overarching, yeah, is a 501c3.
How is that, I wonder?
Beats me. I was kind of amazed when I found it out.
Okay, well.
See, we pondered some of that, and I don't ever want to get in a position where I can't speak the fly-blown, unmitigated, pure, unadulterated truth and facts. And I was afraid that 501c3 would hogtie us too much. It's not just me; it's anybody else on this network that wants to say their piece.
I see. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes, indeed. Take care, Jim.
Good night.
Bye now. All righty. Let's see, we got about 14 minutes left in the program. A couple of stories worth mentioning. Our good friend Angie over at pbsblog.com pbsblog.com sent this along. Have you seen this? A teacher in Wisconsin has been arrested for a blog comment. Talk about chilling free speech. This kind of thing just makes the little hairs on my neck stand up, and there it went, shiver right down my spine. What this has to do with in particular is a website called bootsandsabers.com, a blog that centers on Wisconsin politics. The person in question is James Buss. Bootsandsabers.com, as you can tell from the sound of it, is a conservative blog. James Buss is a former head of the Wisconsin Teachers Union. And what we're finding out here, this man has been charged with making a terrorist threat for sarcasm. Mm-hmm. He made the comment November 16th. He was arrested last week for making the comment. And he left the comment under the name Observer in a running discussion, I guess, on a message board or blog comments, you know, whatever format, regarding teacher salaries. And, of course, being a conservative blog, and I've seen this a million times if I've seen it once, conservatives who hate the education system to begin with, and you know, like Jerry Falwell once said, I'll be glad when education is back in the hands of the church where it belongs. You know, right-wingers, the Grover Norquists of the world and so forth, they hate the idea of public education. They despise it. And if they could kill public education tomorrow, they wouldn't ask whether it needed a gun, a knife, a sword, or a ball bat. They would just go and do it. Like I said, Mr. Buss is a former president of the Teachers Union. He was posting a comment during a thread regarding teacher salaries. Knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, freakazoidal conservatives had commented that teachers are underworked and overpaid. So, being an educated man, Mr. Buss wrote that teacher salaries made him sick because teachers are lazy and they only work 5 hours a day. And he went on and he praised the teen gunman at Columbine who killed 12 students and a teacher before they committed suicide. He wrote, quote, "They knew how to deal with the overpaid teacher union thugs, one shot at a time." So, of course, a teacher became disturbed and called police in West Bend, 40 miles north of Milwaukee, the home of the blog's administrator. So the police got on the scent, and they went and arrested Mr. Buss at his home in Cudahy? Somebody help me. Not a Wisconsinian. Cudahy? South of Milwaukee. Because the blog administrator turned over the IP address for the post. Spent an hour in the Washington County jail, Mr. Buss did, before he was released on a $350 bail. And right now, there are considerations of whether to charge him with disorderly conduct and unlawful use of unlawful use of computerized communication systems. Police Captain Toby Netko defended the arrest. He said the teacher who complained was disturbed by the reference to one shot at a time, and other educators agree it was a threat. What happens when you say bomb in an airport? That's a free speech, isn't it? And people are taken into custody for that all the time. Wow. I mean, I understand the rule about not yelling movie in a crowded firehouse and everything. I really, really do. but clearly it was sarcasm. The inability... You know, it's said that Truman Capote looked at an early edition of Jack Kerouac's On the Road and remarked in his famous way, "That's not writing, that's typing." Well, to a whole lot of people, that's great literature, On the Road. But to some, you know, it's not. One man's nightshirt's another man's pajamas. Sarah Larson, superintendent of the Oak Creek School District, where Buss has worked since 1994, you know, management, said she was dismayed, disappointed, and discouraged. Well, me, I'm bewitched, bothered, and bewildered, sister, by the posting. She said she'd worked closely with Buss when he was president of the teachers' union for 3 years, ending in 2006. It's not something I would have expected any teacher to do. As much as teachers understand the whole situation in Columbine, to reference this is certainly inappropriate. We're so screwed. Sorry. Sarcasm, you know.
They knew how to take care of those teacher union thugs, one bullet at a time.
Good God, there was no indication that the Columbine killers, those sick, twisted monsters, there's no indication that they were motivated because of teacher salaries. It was clearly a sarcastic comment. But God, go out on a blog or a message board or anything like that, a chat room even. You see people missing sarcasm just right over the top of their heads all the time. I can't believe you'd say something like that. Oh, my God. And the next guy has to type back and go, sarcasm, look it up. Seen it a million times. So have you. You know, this is an internet radio network. You're plugged into the internet. You know how it... If you looked at that, would you go, oh, he's threatening? There wasn't a threatening word in the... Oh, for pity's sakes. Donald Downs is a University of Wisconsin-Madison professor and expert in free speech, and he said, all sorts of unsavory, controversial speech are protected by the First Amendment. Quote, it has to be intended to incite violence to be illegal. If it's tongue-in-cheek, there's virtually no way they can claim that.
Police Captain Toby Netko defended the arrest. You know, we went through that.
You know, you don't have a constitutional right not to be disturbed. You don't have a constitutional right not to be afraid. You don't have a constitutional right not to be shocked, not to be horrified. And you certainly don't have a constitutional right to be protected against sarcasm, whether it is ill or poorly done or well done. My God, under this kind of a standard, our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at Finnerman Works is in mortal danger. He engages in some of the most piercing, slashing sarcasm you could ever imagine. Poor Mr. Buss. We'll see a story here, couple of months, maybe 6 months. Talking about how he's been fired. Unlawful use of a computerized communications connection. Wow. Do not go to www.spankmeivebeennaughty.com. You might be engaging in, at least not in Wisconsin, don't do it, because you might be engaging in the unlawful use of a computerized communications connection program-related activity. Well, the only good thing out of this is that he does have a union, and hopefully that union's got some teeth and can stand up for him against the thought police. Holy cow. Thanks, everybody. Tomorrow will, of course, be prayer meeting. We'll have more of the same. Same stuff, different day. You know how it goes. Many thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. He's on his way with the next installment of Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Our thanks also go out to John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia, on his way at midnight Eastern Time with another edition of All Foxed Up. Thanks go out to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, the hardest working man in liberal talk. If you value what happens on the horn, you value what happens with Ben Birch. I remind you again, I'm sorry, I have to. I was very good in making no mention from November 15th to November 30th of our fundraising. We fell way short in November. We've got to come up with $3,500 in December or we're screwed, because we've gone way out on a limb to come up with the equipment that will be necessary for us to take the next steps. If you can help, please do. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Quality News Network. President Bush says all options remain on the table in dealing with Iran and its uranium enrichment program. Despite a new U.S. intelligence report that indicates Iran halted its nuclear weaponry program back in 2003, Mr. Bush says Iran still remains a danger. France and Britain also say pressure must be maintained on Tehran. Iranian leaders say the U.S. intelligence report shows that America and the West should ease up on their country's efforts to enrich uranium for energy purposes. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates is asking countries around the world to help in fighting a growing extremist threat in Afghanistan. On a surprise visit to Kabul today, Gates met with President Hamid Karzai, who told Gates that attacks are increasing and that Afghani forces are undertrained and under-equipped, especially the Air Force. This morning in Kabul, a suicide bomber targeting a nearby NATO convoy wounded at least 22 civilian passersby. In southwest Afghanistan, a suicide bomber detonated himself near a police patrol, killing four and wounding another seven. Five National Guard brigades, that's about 15,000 soldiers, have been called up for combat tours set to start in summer of 2009. Units from Wisconsin, Mississippi, and Oregon will head to Iraq. Units from Georgia and Florida will be assigned to Afghanistan. A Saudi researcher says there are an estimated 5,600 websites spreading Al-Qaeda ideology worldwide. 900 more related websites appear each year. Al-Qaeda sites often change addresses or start up again elsewhere to avoid detection. Captors holding five Britons hostage demanded that Britain pull all its forces from Iraq, posting a videotape showing a haggard victim more than 6 months after his group was abducted. The videotape also